1210, Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Pete Zimmerman produces. Jack Heinrich's doing a good job for us today. And Terry Savage always does, the syndicated financial columnist. Hello again, Terry.
I just poured myself a big fresh cup of coffee because I know that we're going to have a lot to talk about. I'm ready.
Although you strike me as the sort of person who never needs a cup of coffee, Terry.
Basically, I think you're right. I think you're right.
That was not a mark against you. That was just you are a high energy, very active person.
I have a lot of energy. Well, boy, we have a lot to talk about.
Let's start with student loans. What's going on there?
Okay. An announcement that got people excited and headline writers excited, but that isn't really such a very big deal, except it reveals the big one of the big problems with student loans. So this is basically for people who are older and have been out and have been paying 20, 25 years. But over the period, they contacted their servicers. Remember, these were private servicers, mostly not the government in the last 15, 20 years. And the servicers said, oh, you have a problem? We'll just put you in forbearance. When they could have had an income-based plan that would have had them paying maybe $5, $10 a month, and those payments would have been credited toward loan forgiveness after 20 or 25 years, depending on the repayment program. So, in other words, the servicers said, we're making money off these people. Let's keep them on our books. We won't give them the right information. The announcement, the current announcement, recognizes that people were misdirected by the servicers and gives them as much as 3 years credit for payments that they didn't actually make. And we're talking about several hundred thousand borrowers. We got 43 million borrowers out there, okay? So that's one program. The other program that is really getting into gear is this Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. The administrations preceding this never helped people get into that, register their payments, make sure that they were with a public service agency, a hospital, or the like. And so they're doing more to help those people. But basically, for 40-plus million people, the current situation is it's forbearance, no payments, no interest accruing until September 1st. And at that point, we will be 2 months from a major election. I will make you any bet you want that they will extend it again, because the last thing any politician wants, I mean, the president or anybody in Congress wants, is to announce, you got to resume your loan payments now after Labor Day. And by the way, vote for me. So probably this forbearance will be extended. We have not heard about any wipeout of the principal, any $5,000 or $10,000 of the balance or whatever. You know, we haven't heard about
that. Well, it's impossible to know the answer to this question. If they said, okay, to the 40 million people, here's $10,000 of forgiveness per loan, would that get them more votes or less votes? Would people say, hooray, thank you, I'm voting for you? Or would the other 290 million of us go, wait a minute, and vote against them, you know?
Yeah, I paid my – well, I don't know how many hundreds of millions of dollars that would be upset about this are going to change their vote, because they probably already have made up their minds who they're going to vote
right.
for.
Right.
You know, you're asking me to be a political analyst, but the practicality of it all is, are you seriously going to start requiring student loan payments again the minute before the election? I don't think so.
I mean, but the Congress turns over every 2 years, so there's always another election, it seems, in the offing.
How about this? Do you know that Income Tax Day and Election Day are as far apart as you can get on the calendar? They
April
count
15,
on
April,
us having short memories.
March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November. Yeah, they're 7 months apart, so that's about perfect.
There you go.
312-981-7200. You've got a question or a comment for Terry. There's other topics that I know she needs to address, and you've got questions too. Call or text now, 312-981-7200. As we go back into the WGN Radio Newsroom, there's Bob Kessler. Terry, what else do you want to hit before we hit the phone lines?
You know what? Let's hit the phone lines first. We'll see if something triggers some of these ideas I gave you.
Okay, well, let's start with, I think it's Larry on line two. You're on WGN Radio with Terry Savage. How can we help you, Larry?
Yeah, I had a question. My wife and I were on the fluctuating rate for interest on our mortgage? And would it be a good idea with the crazy interest rate going up to refinance and lock in, you know, it's about 5.0 now for 30 years?
No, Larry, it's about 5.35 today, and you're giving me tears in my eyes. A year ago, I said the trade for the year is to lock in your adjustable rate mortgage. I do believe mortgage rates will go higher, and I think you should try to refinance it and lock in the rate now. Now,
that's,
you know, one other thing.
Yeah,
if you could,
yes.
Definitely refinance. And if you could, you've probably been paying on this mortgage for a while. You'll get a significantly lower rate. If you can do a 15-year mortgage, then your monthly payment might not come down so much, but at least you'll be paying it off sooner with less interest.
When you got that ARM, when you got the adjustable rate mortgage, what was the rate that you went in at? Do you remember, Larry?
I think it was below 5, between 4 and 5.
Yeah, it's too bad that you weren't able to get a fixed rate mortgage at that point, but it's a shame.
You're saying I should go with the 15-year if I can afford it?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay,
good
the rate will
Larry.
Be lower.
Thanks for
okay.
the phone call. We go from you to Tom. You're on WGN Radio online. I think that's 3. Hey, Tom, how can we help you?
Hi, Terry and John. Terry, my mom's going to be selling her house, and she's going to be about $250,000 capital gain. Does she have to do something with that?
No. Well, $250,000 is the break-even point. If it's her residence, she's lived there for at least 2 years, there's no tax on the first $250,000 of capital gains. What you can do to help her is go sit down with her and make a list. Mom, you bought this house in 1986 for $150,000. Now you're going to sell it for $400,000. But what did you put into this? Did you put a new roof in? Did you remodel the bathroom? Do you have any records? That raises your cost basis over the original purchase price and make sure she stays under that $250,000 free of taxes, capital gains taxes limit.
Perfect. Thank you, Terry.
Okay. Sure.
Thanks for the phone call. Let's go back to line one. I don't see the name, Jack, of the caller on line one, but it's about student loans. And Kathy, that's you. You're on the air. How are you?
Good. I'm good. I had a question in regards to the public service forgiveness loans for teachers.
Yes.
Where after 10 years you can apply to have your loan forgiven. My daughter has now been a teacher for 17 years, and she applied a few different times and was denied each time. Now, I do see where now they're looking at trying to get more of these approved. But would she have any recourse to go back? She just now paid off her student loans. Would she have any recourse to go back and be reimbursed?
You know, that's a good question. First of all, what you described was the problem with the public service loan forgiveness. Nobody paid attention to it. They made people dance through hoops. And I have not seen anything, but I promise you I will look into it. They're so worried about the existing borrowers. I have not seen anything about potentially
retroactive
giving money back. I think that's a long shot, and I'm really sorry. If you go to studentaid.gov, I'm just looking. It forgives the remaining balance if you've made 120 qualifying payments. But I've never, I'm just looking, it never said anything about paying any excess back. And I'm sorry to hear that. And believe me, you can keep watching my website. If I find out differently, I'll let you know. And one of the things you might do is contact the government at the, I think you just go to studentaid.gov and see if you should post that question anyway to them.
Okay.
They're now talking to people about public service loan forgiveness.
Yes, and I know it was, like you said, you had to jump through hoops, and every time she was denied, and like I said, then we just saw recently where they're going to try to start making it easier and get more people into that program. So,
exactly.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Good luck to you. You know, on the bright side, the loan's paid. I mean, you know, once upon a time, that was a good day when you paid off your loan. Now you're like, oh, darn, I shouldn't have paid off my loan. But you don't owe anymore. So that's a fair transaction. It's a fair transaction. Let's see, we still got time for more phone calls before the break. Terry's on for the full hour. The number's 312-981-7200. Guys, I don't see the name on line four either, but it's about, well, Jimmy, you explain. You're on WGN. What's your question?
Yes. Thank you you for taking my call. Short. I know the market goes up and down. I'm in a dividend, mutual fund dividend. Is that good still to be in there?
Well, sure. It's a mutual fund that picks stocks that pay dividends, and you can trust the portfolio managers that the dividend yield, the percentage that they pay out, is not because it's relatively high because the stock price has fallen. And they search for good quality dividend paying companies. That said, when the whole market, there was an old line, but I don't think it's probably not politically correct out from 40 years ago or something about the market, but when they come to collect you, they take the good girls along with the bad. That's how I'm going to translate it, which was a line back in the 70s that said, you know, when the market's going down, it's not just the bad stocks or the companies with no earnings or questionable earnings that get taken down. When the whole market goes down, even if you're one of the good ones with a good track record of earnings and dividends, those stocks fall as well. So this is a better than... it's a more conservative way to approach the stock market, but it's not going to protect you if the whole market takes a dive.
Thank you. Have
okay. Thanks for the phone call. And I will join the legions of you who are now spinning in the back of your mind, okay, what is that saying? I got the thrust of it, but I don't know the exact words of it. And I appreciate your discretion there, Terry. By the way,
times change.
As well they should.
That was in the old sexist days when I started out my career as a secretary in the brokerage firm, and they could comment on my miniskirts. That wouldn't happen today.
12:26. Okay, we'll pause here. We've got Terry for the hour. You can continue to call or text 312-981-7200. Answer this question when we come back, Terry. Is this the new norm? Please ask Terry Savage if prices, this is about inflation, will ever go back to where they were. It's 12:27. WGN Radio News is next. 12:36. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Hooray, it's Wednesday. That means Terry Savage joins us, the syndicated financial columnist. And in today's show, she's here for the whole hour. So we got still more time for your questions and comments. 312-981-7200. You can call or text. Before we go back to him, Terry, any other ground you want to plow?
Well, you asked me before we went to the break.
Yeah,
about
Thank you, yes.
Someone who wanted to, you know, so I was sitting here thinking, how do I respond to that? And here's a news item today. You know, Netflix stock fell because their growth stopped. It reversed. People stopped subscribing. But then that's hit the NASDAQ index a lot. But the Dow is up a little. You know why? Take a look at Procter & Gamble, which before the market opened, and I don't usually talk about individual stocks, but this illustrates a point, reported quarterly earnings and sales that beat all the Wall Street expectations. Because why? They were able to pass along higher prices to offset the impact of higher costs of everything from the plastic bottles that they, you know, the jars that they put tied into, to the transportation costs. Their sales were up 10% over a year ago. And their earnings were, you know, beat expectations. And they raised prices four times during the last year. I found that really interesting. I thought it was my imagination. And I think what you're seeing now is inflation being priced into everything. Now, will some prices come down? At some point, some prices will come down if costs ever come down. But some costs are sticky. Energy costs move up and down. You know, they go up right away at the gas pump and don't come down so quickly. But in addition to that, wages rarely come down. So when you have a company that has a lot of wage costs, that's a company where you're not going to see the prices come down very quickly. The airlines are trying to meet, that, of course, they have higher energy costs. They don't have enough employees, and they've raised the wages. So you're not going to see any good news from the airlines in terms of fares for a while. So some stuff gets sucked in because of inflation. Home prices, I think we will have some point of recession, and then you'll see the fact that home prices may back off. But for, we had, here's another classic example. It's not just tied, it's homes. This morning it was announced that housing prices gained 15% year over year, the median house price in America, not the rich people's houses or the poor people's houses, the median home price, which is about $375,000 right now. So what you're seeing is built-in high prices. Now we've got higher mortgage rates. That will price some people out of the market. Another reason for the housing price increases, nobody wanted to sell. Right now, after today's report, 12 people who are listening are going to say, honey, Terry Savage said we're getting to the top. We've priced houses out because of the high mortgage rates. We were going to sell. We should sell now, but we don't want to miss this opportunity. And what will happen is people will say, okay, list my house. When we have more supply, it'll offset the rising mortgage rates to a certain extent. But we're seeing inflation built in to just about everything. And you haven't seen anything yet till you see your energy prices this summer, because we still haven't resolved what's going on in Europe.
Again,
and
till
you see food prices.
That happened to us this winter with the gas prices, and you warned us about that in July, and bam, we got hit in November, December, January. But is that going to happen with electricity and air conditioning,
Oh, sure.
You think?
Yeah, I think we're going to see more of this because Europe's trying to figure out how they can get liquid natural gas to offset and not buy from Russia. So those markets are going to remain in an uproar. And we're going to see the impact of Ukraine, which grows first winter wheat, which isn't being harvested, and then the next crops. We're going to see higher food prices, and higher feed grains lead to higher meat prices. And I don't mean to sound like Debbie Doom and Gloom, but I think we have not seen the impact yet of inflation, even though the price of Tide has gone up 4 times this year.
Well, let me just tell you what some other people have said on this show, and they don't disagree with everything you've just said, but they also say that the war at some point might be resolved and the supply chain issues will be resolved and fuel costs relative to your purchasing power will go down. And so it's not exactly transitory, but it's not going to be this bad forever. Would you agree with that assessment?
I think it's going to get worse first. No, in all markets, you know, the cure for high prices is high prices. That's a savage truth, and it's an old market saying. When things get priced out of reach, people stop buying, and then prices drop. So if everybody, I mean, don't ask me what the substitute is, but everybody looked around and said, oh, my gosh, Tide costs X now. It used to cost, you know, 2/3 of that. Now it costs X. I'm going to look around for a different detergent that might be less expensive.
Yeah.
And in every case, people make substitutions. So just saying the general level of prices is now built in, the increases from wages and energy, and it's not going to get better quickly. Eventually, sure. But you know, I don't think I'm ever going to see gas at under $1 a gallon again. And when I was young, it was under $1 a gallon.
But I'm surprised you say that, because that's not important. What's important is your purchasing power. Bread is always going to cost more than it did in the 1940s. That's okay, because I make more money. So am I able to buy more bread or gas because I'm also making more money? That's the more important number.
But that's inflation chasing its own tail. I learned a lesson about real estate back in the early 70s. Friends of mine bought an apartment, really old, fabulous building on East Lakeshore Drive at the time for $125,000. I said, gosh, that's where all the rich people lived when this building was built on in the 1920s. Back in the 1920s, those apartments sold for nearly $1 million. Today, I don't think they've been redone, and they have new plumbing and what they've put in new bathrooms and so forth. When they bought it, it had a hot water tap and a cold water tap in the sink. But I bet today you couldn't get those apartments for under $2 or $3 million. So yes, everything's relative, but the point is you never get ahead in inflation. That's what's so scary about inflation. You get an increase in your Social Security or in your wages, but it's always lagging a little bit behind inflation. That's the danger of inflation.
Okay, Terry, let's take some more phone calls. 312-981-7200. Well, maybe we'll go to Paul right now on line 5. Paul, you're on WGN. How can we help you? You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I have a question for Terry. I'm a city employee, city of Chicago. I have a deferred compensation plan. I've been paying in it for years. Now they're saying that we can switch and put our money in with the tax already paid on it. Is that a good idea?
You know what? I'm going to have to look into that. I haven't heard about it, and I'm not in a position to comment. But I know that the city, I don't want to comment on that. I'm going to just have to Google and search around.
I have another question for you. I got 4 years till I retire.
Okay.
My money is in a managed account. My deferred compensation is a managed account. Should I leave it there? Should I put it in fixed? What should I do?
I don't know what your managed account choices are, Paul. I'm not impressed.
My managed accounts are like a half of a percent or something like that.
Yeah, that's not the point. The point is, have they got you diversified appropriately for someone who doesn't want to take a big loss in whenever the next bear market comes, because you're not going to be, in 4 years you won't be contributing more, so you're not going to take advantage of bargain prices. So that's part, I say this all the time, but that is part of this whole issue of the big financial picture. I have many times mentioned WealthRamp.com. If you look on my website, in the top right-hand corner, it explains what they do. Find your own fee-only fiduciary financial planner. I have zero interest, financial interest, in this company. I just know that Pam Kruger, who started it, who I do a podcast with, and you can click on there to listen to our podcast, is devoted as I am to getting people good investment advice and avoiding the ripoffs. So I would suggest you are in the prime position to go to WealthRamp.com, go through their little quiz. There's no fee to do it. You get matched up with somebody who's been carefully chosen, and I think you should benefit from a couple of sessions with a financial planner.
We've got to take a break
more here,
Paul, but how old are you,
Thank you so much.
Paul, how old are you?
I'm 55.
55, okay. Because I know what's going on in the back of your mind. You don't want to take a loss, but you also know you're going to live 45 more years.
Exactly.
So it's very tempting to be a little more aggressive than you might on the eve of your retirement. And I endorse that, sir. Terry, this is not financial advice. This is just an observation I think some of our listeners have, and it is this. You got to stay in the game. You need to continue to invest, and you need to continue to be in equities. Terry?
Okay, John, I know you're up against a break, but I'm going to remind you.
That's just an observation I know a lot of our listeners have. Go ahead, Terry.
I'm going to remind you of that statement. Somebody bookmark that on a tape. Because it's so easy to say when the market has bounced back, we're a little over 35,000. The highs in the last little bit were 39,000. So we haven't seen one of those, oh my God, bear markets in many years. Yeah. And the most recent ones have bounced back. You know, I'm a long-term believer in the stock market, and with at least a portion of your money in a diversified portfolio, always, no matter how old you get. However, if you have it all in there and you see, and you're retired, and you see it go from, you know, X hundred thousand to half that, and I've lived through four bear markets that cut the Dow in half, you don't start thinking about, oh, I'm glad I'm still in the game. One day it'll be fine. You think, oh, my God, I better sell.
As a new retiree.
Yeah, that's a most dangerous moment. That's why I want you to have a financial plan. I am quite sure I'd be willing to bet. So, Tom, send me an email, terry@terrysavage.com. After you have a meeting, I'll bet that at least 30 to 40% of your money is advised to be in a diversified stock portfolio. But there might be other things you could do to rearrange your life to have a little bit less risk, given your choices inside your deferred comp plan. That's why I want you to speak to someone individually.
Let's put you on hold. Cool. Thanks for the call. And maybe if you want to, if you go down that road, if you go down that ramp, wealth ramp, and want to revisit with us and tell us what you've decided, I think that would be a real education for everybody. It's 1247 on WGN. We've got more business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Tony's Fresh Market in Chicago is being acquired by a private equity company. Cranes reports the grocer is being purchased by Apollo Global Management based in New York. Terms of the deal haven't been disclosed. Tony's has 18 Chicago area locations and several more in development. While decades of family ownership are going away, the founding family will continue to work with Apollo to grow the company. Italian immigrants Tony Ingrafia and Domenico Gambino started the company in 1979. Grocer's first location was at Fullerton in Central Park. For Apollo, the Tony's deal is a further foray into the grocery sector. In 2020, it invested nearly $2 billion into Jewel Osco parent Albertsons. Chicago's Grubhub may be about to be sold again. Its parent company, JustEatTakeaway.com, has revealed it's considering a sale of the company. It's also exploring the possibility of bringing in a strategic partner. Just Eat Takeaway bought Grubhub for more than $7 billion just under a year ago. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
We've got the business of food, and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, lots on the food calendar today, John A. National Pineapple Upside Down Cake today. It's National Cheddar Fries Day, National Banana Day, and it's National Lima Bean Respect Day. What's the old saying about you have to earn respect? Big numbers at the Chicago Board of Trade. Corn is up another 8 cents, 8.07 a bushel, highest it's been since 2012. Soybeans are back in the 17s. As our friend Orion used to warn, prices don't go the same direction forever. The Big O also reminded us on a daily basis for over 60 years how the American farmers and ranchers protect the food security of our country. Here's a rancher who will also share that agriculture is involved in protecting us from nuclear war.
Yeah, this is Ed Butcher, and I own a ranch in central Montana.
Mr. Butcher and his family have been ranching since 1913, and the Rolling Hills Ranch is a big one.
12,000 acres.
He says they run up to 500 cattle, as Mother Nature allows, but she's been awfully stingy lately with moisture, a drought he's not seen in his 78 years. There's not much else to talk about in that part of farming America, except there is a missile next door to Ed's ranch, loaded with a bomb 20 times stronger than the one we dropped on Hiroshima. Ed says the Air Force came calling during the Cold War, wanting to buy some land to place a missile to be aimed at Russia.
Dad sold him an acre.
And for over 60 years, a Minuteman missile has been the nearest neighbor.
I think the silo's about 100 feet deep. Right, well, it's actually on a boundary on the one edge of the ranch.
And there are more scattered on nearby ranches.
These are set in a pod. There's, I think it's 9 of them.
And deep underground, about 10 miles away.
And they have a central control that's manned 24/7.
The military theory was that an enemy would target those missile sites rather than big cities, but Ed doesn't think so.
I think we're probably safer here than the folks in L.A. and New York are.
And if the order comes to launch the missile, he believes it would blast out of the silo, screech over their house, climb to 70 miles high, and theoretically arrive at its target in about a half an hour, detonate, and wipe out everything and everyone within a five-mile radius. And as for having the Air Force and its missiles as neighbors?
The people out here, they're plumb happy with having them here.
There are perks.
Our road system was tremendously improved.
And the Air Force pumps a lot of money into the local economy, too. Missouri had about 150 nuclear missiles until 1995. That's the business of food and national defense on 720 WGN.
Terry, the time has been flying here. We got time for a last comment or call from you, Terry Savage. What are you thinking about?
Let me quick respond to something you asked me after the show last week. Someone was talking about Social Security checks, and we talked about the fact that this year we got a big increase and that next year the increase could be significant, maybe or even around 9%, and asked whether they should wait till next year to start taking Social Security.
Yeah.
But the fact is that your basic wage, your basic Social Security check is determined by an index that's like, it's a mystery, the experts know it. And your increase in inflation this year that you didn't get if you start waiting till next year to get that higher base check will be factored in. So the advice remains, you want to wait as long as possible, even though you might be passing up an increase of 9% next year and the typical increase is only 8%. But I want to actually give you a website to go to. You don't have to believe me. The person I got this from is the real guru of Social Security, economist Lawrence Kotlikoff, who created the website Maximize My Social Security. If you want to know in your situation, either yourself or you and your spouse, it costs $40. And believe me, that's $40 well spent. Go to MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com. You don't have to believe me. He is the guru. And you can go through with all your own information. They will actually run back to Social Security and get your projected earnings and your projected check and tell you what you would be best off doing. So I wanted to pass that on this week.
And then you can disagree with it if you want, but at least
you got the major economist who's the expert on it created this tool, and yeah. It's just what you need. MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com.
Nice to hear your voice today, Terry. Thanks for helping us out.
Thank you so much for having me on, John.